moms matter? Do moms really matter? You know, I don't know. I didn't really take the time to try to find a study on it, but I know there's lots of studies on fathers and the impact that dad makes in the family life. The impact that he makes and such to the degree that it can really mess up a family if there's not a father figure, not only present in the home, but active in what's happening at the home. And so we know dads matter, but do moms matter? In fact, one might even question whether dads matter. And the reason why I bring that up is because we live in a culture where we have, according to one website, 53 different genders and 68 different genders. I did a little research, and as I did, it happened back in the 1950s. Dr. John Money coined the term gender identity. And he used it to differentiate beyond just the biological makeup that we are. He used it not just of biology, but he used gender to talk about the psychological person. So your sex or your biology might be male or female, but your gender, your makeup as who you are, as psychologically who you are, could be any number of things. It could be male, it could be female, it could be transgender, it could be all kinds of different things. There was a list, and it could be agender or cis or all kinds of goofy things that I looked at, and I said, these don't even mean anything. In fact, when you say gender, it could mean a whole bunch of different things. What you really ultimately come down to, I believe, is it doesn't mean anything whatsoever. Take a moment. This is real life. Take a moment. Think through that. We've decided, no. The United States has decided that marriage is a matter of love and not of what we would call gender, male and female. And so, because of that, it can be between two men and two women. But there's also a great push and movement of making sure that we make everybody feel welcome. So in the public schools, you train that you're not necessarily male or female. You might be identified as something different. And so if you want, and you've got a female body, but want to use a male restroom, you're more than welcome to. Target has decided a couple years ago to publicly announce that you can use whatever restroom that you want. Perhaps some of you joined a boycott as part of that. I know as a family we avoid shopping there because we're not in agreement with that sort of, really can become a safety issue. So if we say that it really doesn't matter what you are on the outside, it's just really who you are on the inside, we completely remove identity from who a person is. And so in our world, we get certain things like this. Gender identity is the internal perception of one's gender, which means your body parts don't matter. It's what you feel like you are on the inside. Now, if that's true of what we are as individuals, how do we put that into a family setting? What is a mother and a father? Logically, if we're following the way the world is going, where on applications you can put male, female, or other, how does that work in a family? Who is the mother and who is the father? Well, I guess you would say both are mother and father, or neither are mother and father. And what does that do to the family? How does that help a child whom you're to train in the way they're supposed to go? How does that help them know what a mommy does and what a daddy does? How are they supposed to know? Well, you know what I am so glad for? Is that we have God Himself telling us that He created, Genesis 1:26, He created mankind in His image. Male and female, He created them. That tells me that God intentionally made you a boy or a girl. And even though you may not necessarily have all the characteristics, personality of a girl, or all the personality typically of a boy, that you really are one or the other. Sometimes a girl doesn't quite fit in a certain category, or a boy doesn't quite fit in a certain category as far as personality. And what I mean is, sometimes you have tomboys. What are tomboys? They're not boys, they're girls, right? And the girls, a lot of times, girls that have been raised with brothers, and so they're not afraid to do anything. I appreciate Daphne. Daphne is a wonderful young lady who acts like a boy half the time. She does. She likes crickets, and she likes some of those, but she can scream like a girl. I tell you what, you get her with, we've had her over at our house with a few different girls, you would not believe, that's when us guys think it's time to move out. She is all girl, but she's not all that interested in playing with dolls. That doesn't mean that she's not a girl. That means God has given her that unique personality that she has that's different than every other single person on the planet because of the way He's made her, because of influences at home and at school and at church, that the lovely lady that she is, she's not always necessarily interested in with the girls kind of stuff. Boys, my boys, are for the most part pretty typical boys. And yet they're different in some of their personalities. Xander, you might say, wait a minute, maybe he's not. Well, wait a minute. You look and say he's very sports and athletic and things like that. Yeah, but you think of a tender heart, who do you think of? You usually think of a girl having a tender heart, right? Where you can look at him wrong, make him cry. Stubborn as a pain as he could be when he was a kid, I could literally look at him the wrong way and make him cry. It was fun. No, I shouldn't say that. He does. That doesn't mean he was born wrong. That means God gave him a unique personality to him that makes him who he is. God made us different. Moms do matter. As moms matter, and so do dads. What function do they have in the family, or in our setting, in the church family? I'm glad you asked. It's found in 1 Samuel chapter 1. In 1 Samuel, we find a story about Hannah. Hannah was a wonderful lady. She, though, was, we might look at her and see her as a victim, because in many ways she was. She had a husband named Elkanah. And Elkanah had two wives. He had Hannah, which was perhaps his first wife, probably his first wife, and Peninnah. Peninnah, the wife he had, had children, but Hannah didn't have any children. So Peninnah was a mother in the family, and probably being a mother and having to take on that role had ways that she would relate to her husband in ways that Hannah did not. Hannah was very heartbroken. We have to keep in mind, and I think it really is true, and to us to a much lesser degree in our society, but certainly it was very strong in their society. In their society, for a woman who is married to not have children was a tremendous shame. It really pointed to the fact that God had cursed you in some way. It kind of, knowing that kind of gives you a different light on the way that Sarah reacted when she finally had her child. I mean, you're thinking having a child when you're over 90 years old, that doesn't seem like as much joy as it could possibly be. But it was, because it really showed God's hand of blessing upon her. Hannah, here she was, not only, this is bad enough that you feel bad because, you know, you can't have children and God must hate you, because how many times did she think that? How many times did she think that God didn't like her because she couldn't have children? God wouldn't have mercy on her because she couldn't have a child, biologically or psychologically, whatever the problem was, that she could not have children. What was an issue? Peninnah had children, so the problem wasn't Elkanah. So the problem was all hers. It was all her fault. Have you ever said that to yourself? Especially even when it wasn't, technically it can't be your fault. And worse than that, Peninnah would harass Hannah. Peninnah would add fuel to the fire. Hannah had to feel so miserable. Year after year, as we go through this story, we find that year after year that they would go to the temple. And Hannah, she would go and she would pray. Now, I'm going to bring to you a point that maybe we should think of it being at the last, because it does fit at the end of the story. But I need to make it first because of its priority. And the fact is, a mother's chief responsibility is to glorify God. A mother's chief responsibility is to glorify God. Keep that in mind. Moms, you're sitting here. Dads, keep this in your ear too, because guess what dads are supposed to do? But in 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31, in particular for us who are believers, whether we eat or drink or whatever we do all for the glory of God. Moms, I can see your responsibility. You know your responsibility is to raise these kids upright. Right? Isn't that what we say? I got to raise these kids upright. I got to make sure they're fed. I got to make sure they're dressed right, because their dad can't take care of that. But I got to make sure they're dressed right. They don't embarrass me or the family by the way they go out in public like their father does sometimes. I need to make sure that they know, and they know how to take care of themselves. In our family, the rule was, once you turn 5, mom and dad don't touch your shoelaces. That was mom's rule. So you had to learn how to tie your shoes by your 5. We were serious. She was serious about this, and I'm being a loving husband, supporting my wife, and so I was right along with her. So by the time they were 5, I had to make sure they knew how to make the tree, make the rabbit go around the tree and in the hole and pull it tight, so that way, by the time they were 5, they weren't running around with their shoes untied because they didn't know how to do it. Because the rule was, you had to learn how to do it on your own. Why? Because she knows she needs to train these kids to do what's right. Yes, you do have that responsibility, moms. It's a heavy responsibility. We read Proverbs 31 and see how she cares for the home. They're talking primarily about a wife, but so you can see how it relates to the children as well. And so she's doing everything she can to make sure that her children come out right. That's not your first job. Your first job is to bring glory to God. The first job you have is to make sure that God is honored in the way that you raise up your children. There's even examples in the scripture of mothers that train their children to do wickedly. I remember working at Kmart and watching on the monitor, and the mom is right there giving the items to the child and telling the child to take the items and to put them in their coat like this. Training her child how to steal. And the reason you do that is why? The reason you do that is because the children can't go to prison like the mom can. That's why you do that. That's why they would do that. Technically, when they walk out of the building, the mom has not stolen. Mom has contributed to the delinquency of a minor, but she has not stolen. And so, when you walk out the door, you grab the children. Sounds like a terrible thing to do. But you grab the children because they're the ones that have stolen. And then you call the police, and then the police take care of the rest. There are a lot of moms that'll do that. But if you know that your primary focus is to glorify God, you're going to do that. Hannah did it, and we typically think of the end of the story, but look here in 1 Samuel chapter 1. 1 Samuel chapter 1, go to verse 9. Hannah, they would go to Shiloh to worship the Lord. Hannah rose after they had finished eating and drinking in Shiloh, and Eli, the priest, was sitting on the seat by the doorpost of the tabernacle of the Lord. So Eli the priest is sitting there, and he comes and sees Hannah there. She was in bitterness of soul. Now, it might seem really sinful and wicked for this, but maybe perhaps it was true of you when you said, "Boy, I sure wish, you know, we would start a family." And it took a while before the family started. And you'd get frustrated because it didn't happen. You start blaming others and start blaming God. Here, she's in bitterness of soul. She's angry. I don't know that she's angry with God, but she's certainly angry with Peninnah, who's been making fun of her, harassing her about not being able to have children. So here, Hannah, in bitterness of soul, what does she do? Where does she go when she's in trouble? She goes to God. See, if the chief responsibility is to glorify God when you're stuck, when you need help, where would you go? You would go to God. She goes to God and she prayed to the Lord and wept in anguish. She knew where the answer was. We like to think we have all the answers, but who really has all the answers? God does. God does. It's okay to say, "Look, I don't know the answer to this." And here's a situation where she was stuck. There was nothing she could do. There was nothing somebody else could do. It just was. The only thing she could do is go to God because He's the only one that really could fix the problem. And the problem, Elkanah says, is that she needed to change her heart because isn't he better than 10 sons? Talk about a pretty proud husband, right? I'm better than 20 sons, so I got him beat. he's doing what he can. He doesn't know how to help. And he's bringing up the point, look, he would give her a double portion because it says here that he loved her. And he would do everything. He probably spoiled her to the best of his ability. He couldn't fix it, though, as much as he tried. She knew, though, the ultimate answer was from God. They harassed her. Others, probably not just Penna, but others harassed her because that she couldn't have children. Hannah was certainly affected, and even though her husband showed that care for her, the real answer was in God. You know, it's common for us to think that we need to meet somebody else's expectations. It's common for us to think that we need to look a certain way, or that we need to feel a certain way, or think a certain way, because that's the way other people do. You know what frustrates women, it seems to me, by observation, what frustrates women the most is that they're not accepted. They don't accept themselves because other people don't accept them. I came across an article that I read. It was about an underweight woman. She looked underweight. And how miserable she was trying to stay that certain weight, she decided not to. Tried to stay that certain kind of weight. That doesn't mean that she ate 18 gallons of ice cream. She wasn't trying to be unhealthy. But she decided, you know what, I'm going to stop worrying about what other people think and stop saying to myself how fat I am because I don't think I meet a certain magic number on the scale. Same with when it can be with that, or the way you dress, or the way that your hair is, or it could be the way, the kind of job that you have. You know what? You know what you call a person who doesn't have a job out? A woman who does not have a job outside of the home? A waste of society. She's not contributing to society in whatsoever. That's what a stay-at-home mom is. If you look at our culture, that's the way. Oh, you don't have a real job. Yeah. Actually, the secret is if you talk to a few moms, they want what they call a real job because they can't handle the job that it is at home. That's a hard work. I've done it before. I've stayed at home, played Mr. Mom before. These guys here have. Yeah, we're glad we go outside the home to work. It's hard work being in the home. We have a mentality that the society is trying to tell us what we're supposed to wear. What kind of person you're supposed to have. Your appearance, the kind of job you're supposed to have. We worry so much about that and forget that God is the one who we're supposed to please, not others. And when we do have problems, our first point to go to isn't the world. The first point to go to is God. And have him change our heart or change the situation that we're in. Hannah knew that God was what she needed for help. It was he who she could trust. He had the answer to her request. When you're in trouble and your goal and your responsibility is to glorify God, the first place you're going to go when things get rough is to God. Who perhaps leads you to your husband or to another godly Christian woman to be able to encourage you, who through the scriptures and the Holy Spirit will lead you so that way you make a decision that glorifies God. She sought to honor God in verse 11 as she prays in anguish. She made a vow and said, Lord of hosts, if you indeed look at on the affliction of your maidservant, very humble here, and remember me and not forget your maidservant, but will give your maidservant a male child, then I will give him to the Lord all the days of his life, and no razor will come upon his head. Look, she said, look, if you do this for me, I'll be excited. I'll be so happy. Then I'll love you. That's not what she said. She said, if you do this for me, in honor because of what you've done, I will give him back to you. As badly as she wanted a child to hold her arms, she said, after, you know, at the point that he can, then I am going to give him back to you. Wow. Was she looking just to please herself? No. She was looking to bring glory to God. Your primary responsibility is to glorify God. You know, it takes a great sacrifice to be a mom. Motherhood, your chief responsibility is to glorify God, but does require a great sacrifice. Romans chapter 12, verse 1 says, I beseech you therefore, brethren, in the SRV, in the light of the great mercies of God upon your soul, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable to God, which is your reasonable service. Paul talks about in light of the great salvation that we have. So he says, by the mercies of God, because of what God has done for us, we need to be living sacrifices to Him. It's true of all of us. And Hannah, she's seeking to glorify God. She knows motherhood requires great sacrifice. For her, it was a sacrifice of her son to God. She said, if you'll do this, I want to honor you by giving him back to you. That had to be a very, very difficult choice. To tell God that I will honor you and make this personal sacrifice. I look around in life and I see moms that are not moms. Now, it could be just occasions, or sadly, too often it's a pattern. Children are like pets, like little dogs and cats that you have at home. And I don't mean the way that they make a mess all the time. I'm talking about the fact that they're there, they're cute, you pet them a little bit, you put food out for them once in a while, you make sure that they get outside when they need to get outside, and then you make sure that you kind of keep an eye on them, they don't run in the street and stuff. But when you want to go do whatever you want to do, you take off and just go do it, and you leave the dog and the cat at home. Why would you do that? If you want to go to a nice restaurant, they usually don't want your cat there with you. I've seen this, and I've heard stories as well. I was told of a story of a mom at the grocery store, and the kids are there taking apples and throwing them back and forth at each other, while the mom is over there not paying any attention. She's over there talking to whoever she wants to talk to, or texting whoever she wants to talk to, not paying any attention to her kids. None whatsoever. And I don't know, we don't have any greater context than that. I don't know how, you know, maybe it was a really important business call or whatever the issue was. I could see my kids in a grocery store throwing apples at each other. But I can also see that my kids have been trained up to know better than to do that. So on one hand, well, I could see them doing that and me having to get after them. I don't know if they would do that now. But is there a pattern where we think that kids are pets, and you might drag them along when you have to go somewhere? I tell you, we had a conversation when we got married and kids came on the scene. Conversation was this way: life is no longer about us. We used to be go on the couch and see what we could get in order to be able to go out to eat or go to the movies or something like that. And we would go. We could go at 10 o'clock at night. We could go at 5 o'clock in the morning. And just get up, go. But when the kids came, we said, no, we can't do this anymore. It's not the babysitter's responsibility to raise our children. It is not the Daycare is a responsibility to raise our children. It's not even our grandparents. They weren't around to be able to come over all the time. It's not our parents' responsibility to raise our children. Now, we didn't see anything wrong with having a babysitter come over, or if our parents were close enough to be able to come and stay and to go off on occasion, to go on a date or something. But we knew the primary responsibility was ours. So we knew that if we went to do something, we had to pack a whole suitcase full of clothes and diapers and everything else that you need to take. Why? Because we had a responsibility, and it required a sacrifice of our time, a sacrifice of our money, a sacrifice of all the things we'd love to do. I can't wait till they're all gone, because then we can do all those things that we want to do. Well, that's not true. We're going to miss them. Probably a lot of things we'll want to do is go visit them, harass them, spoil their kids, and then leave. Motherhood does require a great sacrifice. Here, for Hannah, there was a great sacrifice that, in her case, that it took. It was a sacrifice of when Samuel got old enough to be able to leave him there at the temple, at the tabernacle, to leave him there with Eli and let him serve the Lord. Why? Because her primary responsibility was to give glory to God. But she knew there was a great sacrifice. It'd probably be sacrifice in the home she knew of being able to do some of the things she wanted. But she understood that. Finally, though, understand that motherhood brings great reward. Hannah, after she had her son, she took and brought him to the temple. We find as we continue to read the story that God not only blessed with Samuel, but blessed with more children. Because of her desire to glorify God, he not only blessed her with Samuel, but other children as well. I'm going to turn back to Proverbs 31, where we read from this morning. As I look there, I see that when you have a wife and a mother who works so diligently, whose goal is to glorify God in the family. Her first goal isn't to just please herself. It isn't just to care for the kids, but it's to honor God in what she does and how she does it. And even though it requires great sacrifice, now look at Proverbs 31 and come to verse 30. Says, charm is deceitful, beauty is vain, but a woman who fears the Lord. What does a woman who fears the Lord look like? Well, that was the point of verses 10 on. She is one that takes care of her house, one that raises her children, one that is wise in the decision that she makes with the finances and the time that she has, that she does with her hands. What happens in the end? Well, verse 28, her children rise up early and call her blessed. Sometimes they rise up early and ask what's for breakfast. We come around to Mother's Day. You know, number one call and card day is Mother's Day. Why? Because they call up their mom and bless them. Her husband also, he praises her because of the woman that she is, the mother that she has been. Go over to verse 31, and it's a command, but it says something about her. It says, give her the fruit of her hands. She's done all this work. What's the result? Let her works praise her in her gates. There is tremendous reward in motherhood. You look here at the mothers that are here. Mothers, the grandmothers especially. If you were to talk to them and ask them about their children, I'm sure they could tell you all the horror stories there are about children. But you know what they'll say in the end? What a blessing their children were. Perhaps still are. Sometimes children, they kind of go off on their own a little bit, but you know what? Those children are still there for them. It was a teachable moment. And I appreciated it, and I told her about this as well. After the funeral of Ray, we see some of the flowers still here, but the flowers were left while everything was being done, and part of the family came back, and it was Gail and her daughter that were here, and then it would be Gail's grandchildren. And so as they were here, the two younger children, I said, "Hugh, you need candy." And sure, what kid doesn't need candy, right? So I said, "Do you need candy?" And they were a little shy about it, but I came out with candy. And I gave them 3 Starbursts apiece, but right in their hand. And the gal said, "Thank you." And the mom said to the son, "You need to say thank you." And he's got to be 4 maybe. I don't know. He's not very old. And so this was his thank you. Right up along his mom's leg. Just as embarrassed as a kid could ever be. I have kids. I understand that. I have a couple kids in particular that would behave that way. So I didn't think much about it. They go to leave, and the mom has the candy in her hand. And she says, "I want you to know that I appreciate it, but I have to use this as a teachable moment. I have to give these back because he won't say thank you." What a mean mom, right? You know what I did? I thanked her for being a great mom. Here was a young lady who wanted to glorify God. Wasn't going to give in to, now, I don't believe this is true, but we're just going to put it in the story because if the story had come out different, it would have been true. She wanted to teach her brat kid that you say thank you. I don't believe he was a brat. But she was trying to prevent him from being one. So I thanked her for her diligence in being a great mom. A little sacrifice, a little humility, certainly wanting to honor God, certainly wanted to teach her children right. So too of the mothers here. In all this, I want you to know that it's certainly worth the reward. So often when you hear stars on gift testimonies, you hear things like this: college basketball star in 2015, Donovan Mitchell out of Louisville, says, "My mom has worked so hard to help me get where I am. I wouldn't be here without her." Another female college basketball star, 2015, says, "My mom just tells me to be the best that I can in everything I do, in life and in general. She's like my heart. I don't know where I would be without her." One writes that her mom fed and raised 3 girls on her own. She cooked, cleaned, even braided her hair. Worked 70 plus hours a week in a factory. This is the testimony's own words. Melina Martinez, the director of marketing for Simply Safe Home Security, says her mom, "She's a beast. She inspired me to fight and to reach for the sky, but most importantly, she inspired me to work my tail off. I'll never reach her gargantuan status, but her example fuels me every day." The impression I get is that her mom was simply a blue-collar nobody, but in her daughter's eyes, she'll never meet that standard. That daughter will never meet her mom's greatness because of the work that she did. Moms, you do a great job. Your kids will probably tell you. They probably can't get all the words out right. But understand that it's a great job. I want you to leave here understanding that you've been blessed with the responsibility of motherhood. For those of you that you don't have children of your own, you still have been blessed because you having an impact as mothers and the kids here at Park Lane Baptist Church, or kids that you're involved with out in the world, you still have an impact in their life. And as a result, as hard as it is, the great sacrifice that you make, you know, not only is it a great responsibility, but it's a great blessing from God. I want you to go home knowing that God has blessed you with it.